Hello and welcome to this edition of Tuesdays of the Right Down Euclid. As usual, I'm your host, Chris Manning, alongside our site blogger, Trevor Magnotti. We're both a little, I think we're both a little bit sluggish this morning and this Sunday, but we're going to try our best to break down everything and get through the haziness, how we're feeling. But Trevor, how are you feeling today, my friend?
I mean, as good as I can be for given the weird weekend that this has been sports-wise. I mean, we're getting a 7 versus an 8 in the national title game for men's basketball. Ohio University just hired a head coach at 1:32 in the morning. And the Cavs basketball season is actually, finally, like, graciously, effectively over. Like, the last night's OT loss to the Bobcats pretty much seals the deal after the Hawks lost on Friday. We've said it time and time and time and time and time again, but now the numbers are actually matching up with what we've been saying, and that is that the Cavs are done. And I, for one, am okay with that.
Yeah, you know, and you know, one thing you mentioned to me right before we started recording is there's this argument out there that if you make the 8 seed, it's going to propel you to future success.
Mm-hmm.
History shows us, as you pointed out, that that's not necessarily the case. I think playoff experience is valuable, but being an 8 seed and then getting beaten by Miami or Indiana in 4 or 5 games is basically not really, I don't know how much that really helps you.
Yeah.
You know, and again, the season pretty much is over, so we're going to kind of eulogize the season really quick. I guess for me, the thing I'll remember most about this year is that, I guess described in one word, is that it was just kind of chaotic. You know, you had a lot of things change throughout the season. You had a GM fired kind of out of the blue. Not like it wasn't coming at some point, but just kind of like dropped like in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
You had a trade for a player that occurred late at night in the Weldang. You then somehow traded Spencer Hall's trade kind of came out of left field. You've had some Kyrie's had to defend himself from the media several times this season. There's this weird part of the Cavs fan base that thinks the team should build about Deion Waiters.
Yeah.
Mike Brown's coaching at NBA, the same team he coached a few years ago. It's just kind of a weird, kind of eclectic season with a lot of highs and a lot of lows.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, I call the season chaotic.
Yeah, it was weird. There's a lot of things that we just never really envisioned happening this year. Like, a lot of it, there was some stuff where it was kind of like, okay, we kind of see this coming. Like, we kind of see that Jared Jack might have not have been a fit with the Cavs. We had kind of have seen that Andrew Bynum wasn't going to work out. But, like, I mean, Deion moving to the bench kind of threw everything off. Anthony Bennett was absolutely not what we expected him to be. I don't think anyone in their right mind ever expected, even a week before it happened, the Luol Deng trade, and definitely no one expected the Spencer Hawes trade. It was just a season of very, very weird things happening to a team that was built very, very weirdly.
And I guess in that sense, it makes a lot of sense because we never really knew what to expect, I don't think. I think we went back and looked at our prognostications from the Gents over Fear the Sword, from, you know, the SI guys, the ESPN crew, whatever, whoever you want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone accurately just predicted how weird this team was going to be. And as Jason Lloyd, someone pointed out a few weeks ago on a tweet, this team basically became impossible to kind of figure out on a daily basis. There's just so much going on that you just can't be like, this is the problem. Like, the problems repeated themselves in similar fashions, but they just came out in different ways. I mean, who would have thought Matthew Dellavedova would have, like, end up playing as much as he did?
Yeah.
Who would have thought Tristan would start so well and then kind of implode?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we should have seen it coming, but Anthony Bennett had one of the worst rookie seasons of all time. I guess the most predictable part of the season is that Anderson Barrageau ended up missing a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
Because that's just kind of
But it wasn't like it wasn't like a huge chunk, so I guess improvement there with Barrageau, but yeah. Like, if you went back and listened to our podcast, like, it was like every week was different. Like, one week would be really positive because they'd go on a little bit of a run, and the next week we'd be just completely down on everything because they'd look like total crap. It just back and forth all season long. It was very very strange. And, I mean, if you look at the schedule, like, this was a team of just... This was a team of runs the entire season. I mean, they had the 5-game losing streak in November, and then they won, turned around, won 5 of their next 6, had another 6-game losing streak, a streak of winning 4 out of 6, another 6-game losing streak, 6-game winning streak, 2 more 4-game losing streaks, a couple 3-game winning streaks. It was just, they were a team of runs, and when they got on a roll, it never really lasted that long. And when they got, when they started playing poorly, it kind of dragged on for about a week or two at a time.
Yeah, and you know, you also had several games where they just were blown out, just kind of unceremoniously. The Hawks game, the first Spurs game. I mean, there's just several games where you were just like blowouts. Then you just had these random games where they just play obnoxiously above their level, and it just was just so confusing. I guess one other thing I want to ask you is, if you had to pick right now, and I may have asked you this last week as well, or asked you this at some point, I feel like I've asked you this before, team MVP. Like, who would you say is the player you're going to most associate with this Cavaliers team? Because I think it's Deion Waiters, personally. And I say that just because if you look at the guy who consistently over the course of the year kind of, in a way, resembled, became the team's spirit animal, for lack of a better word, kind of just up and down, not always making sense, but kind of always just kind of going at it, and just was kind of most all or often not just kind of always there. So, if I was going to guess, who resembles this team, I would go with Deion.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to do that too, because it's weird to associate Deion Waiters with consistency, but after December, like, he brought the same level most nights, and he was really the one player who I think developed the most this season. Out of any of the young guys, he was the guy who took the most strides. Looking back at him from October, the beginning of November to now, it's two completely different players in terms of the intensity that they play with, and on the defensive side of the ball, it's a completely different player. I think that Waiters by far was the most promising development of the season, and I think that him as our quote-unquote MVP makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's really another option, you know? You could always argue Kyrie, but to me, it felt like at times your DN was the guy for, like, stretches. He was just on the field. He was on the court more, you know? So, and I guess last thing I'll ask you about this season, what was your high point? And the game or moment you'll most remember, and the low point. For me, the high point, I think, probably is going to be that Knicks win where Jared Jack just kind of went off, because it was just kind of, without Kyrie, you have the kind of everything that you were hoping would work would just kind of like happen to work in one night. And I guess to me, the low point would just be that the game where Kyrie went scoreless against the Hawks, where they got blown out, and Deion was just, Deion and them taking some flack on Twitter for how much he just was shit-talking. Yeah. But, and then I guess my other like moment would be that Deion's dunk against the Grizzlies a few weeks back, where they ended up like being the game changer of the game.
Yeah.
I love that moment, and I love how he went on Twitter afterwards and just kind of embraced like that moment for himself, and those kind of things are fun to watch.
Yeah, I think the high moment of my season was the Oklahoma City win, just because it was a really quality win against a very quality opponent. They came in there and they controlled the game. A lot. We got to see a lot of different offensive wrinkles in that game than they had been running previously. Spencer Hawes really broke out in that game and had a hell of a contest against Steven Adams. I just think that was by far the high point. My low point was the game that was probably the perfect encapsulation of the entire season. It was actually one of the wins. It was that late December win over Milwaukee in overtime where I remember you were at the game.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, Kyrie was sick. Deion was sick. Bennett was sick. The Bucks were missing, like, 12 guys. And it was just the sloppiest, most terrible basketball any of us had seen. I mean, Kyrie did go off for 39 points, but, I mean, you had Alonzo G starting in that game.
I will never forget watching that game, and literally I feel like every possession either ended for the Bucks ended in either a Chris Middleton 3 or a like Ojemeo just like brick. And the other thing about the game is like the whole game, the only thing that kept me interested the whole game was that Kyrie Irving was like the subplot of the game for me was Kyrie Irving just tormenting Brandon Knight.
Yep.
Like just psychologically swatted him, crossed him over. Like he just tormented him that whole game. And that was about the only thing about the game that was like mildly engaging.
So, yeah. Ojemeo took 11 threes in that game. He hit three of them. Yeah, that was and it went to overtime. The Bucks were starting Miroslav Radulica, Miroslav Radulica and Alonzo G started in this game. Like that, it was just everybody was injured. Nobody wanted to play in this game. No one wanted this win. It was the ugliest game of the season. Now, what was your most entertaining game that the Cavs played this season?
Ooh, I think that's obvious. I think it's the Portland game at the Cube where Lillard hit the game winner. I think it's either that or the Hawks game where Teague hit the game winner. I think it's just...
it's funny to say. I honestly think it was the... I think it was the Hawks game. That was just a ton of fun.
The Portland game, though, was, like, just back and forth. I mean, as much as basketball is a team sport, some of the best moments come from when you have two players just dueling. And you had Kyrie and Dame just kind of dueling. And I think I have a soft spot for that game just because it led me to write probably my favorite piece that I've ever written for Write That Nuclear, which is my piece on, like, Kyrie's kind of different place than Dame and why it's slightly unfair to kind of compare their growth aspects and how they're kind of different. But... I'll go with that one, and I think the Bucks game would be the one that if I could erase it from my mind, it would probably be that Bucks game.
Yeah, there are a few games from this season that I just want to completely erase from my mind, such as Timberwolves 124, Cavs 95.
Was that the game was that the Timberwolves game where they just like came ridiculously back?
No, that was the first game when they won 93-92. But the second game, they just got blown out of the water. What else is there? Spurs 126, Cavs 96. That was fun.
That was the Danny Green show.
Both Celtics losses.
Especially the one where Earl Clark just couldn't inbound the ball.
Yeah. The Hawks loss. The every Bulls game, I just wish I could erase those from my mind. Because if I had to watch the Bulls and Cavs play one more time...
It's so hard. It's so bad. Just so much, like, dysfunction.
It's so bad. The Kings loss. Yeah. Also underrated, horrible game.
Yeah, I columnized that game because there was no... Like, it was just so obvious. Yeah. It was... That might be one of the low points, too, because they'd just gotten Dang.
Yeah.
And it was
And they were coming off two really good wins against the Sixers and the Jazz, and then they just went into Sacramento and... I was at the OU game, and I just remember asking you how it was going, and you texted me the final score, and I was just like, what?
Yeah, that game.
But, yeah, there was a lot of ugly basketball this season. There were some high points, of course, but, yeah, just looking through the schedule, there were so many just bad games. Also, shout out to the... Knicks loss on Z's jersey retirement night that forced me to analyze how drunk the game was in my recap. That was fun.
Or how that made Dan Gilbert like tried to like basically call out his team at halftime in his speech, and then it just got even worse in the second half.
Yeah.
But moving along to semi-sad topics, as Trevor alluded to, the season is pretty much over at this point for the Cavs. There's five games left. Mm-hmm. It's going to basically, we'll make this quick because there's three games this week, but.
I just looked at the three games.
They're not
fun. Are you ready for this? I'm not ready for this.
I am not ready for this at all. This is going to be a painful week. The three games this week, they have a couple days off, then it's versus the Pistons on Wednesday, which is just guaranteed to be an ugly thing. That's not even going to be a game, it's nothing. Then you get the Bucks on Friday.
Woo!
And then you get the... Oh, boy.
And then you're the undefeated against the Cavaliers, Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
Rolling into town. Yeah,
there's a really good chance that at the end of the season, the Cavs are going to be 0-4 versus both the Bobcats and the Celtics.
Well, one of those is sadder than the other, and it's not the Bobcats.
Yeah.
Who would have ever thought that we'd be saying that? But, yeah.
Then they bookend the season a week from Wednesday against the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, but I guess we'll preview that as well, just so that we can get it out of the way.
We'll keep this very simple. For the Cavs, and Trevor can break this down more, I think it's pretty obvious that the Cavs have to win Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and then next Wednesday to even have a shot of making the playoffs at this point.
Absolutely. And, I mean, realistically, they could beat all four teams. Because Brooklyn's kind of locked into their playoff position, and Detroit, Boston, and Milwaukee have absolutely nothing to play for. And it would actually be incentivized for the Celtics to continue to lose out, because if Orlando wins one more game, they'll be able to get or move up in the power tankings, overtake Orlando, and have the third worst record in the league. Yeah, this is... this is not going to be a fun week of basketball. There's just no teams here with anything to play for.
No. The Pistons are just, like, they need to make sure they keep their pick.
They're even, like, locked into their draft spot. Like, just looking at the league-wide ratings, like, it's them and the Lakers and the Kings. And I think they're safe. Getting their pick, because, you know, they're 28-49, Sacramento's 27-49, and then the next best team is Cleveland.
And I don't think the Cavs are going to overtake Detroit. I think they're safe.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll come out and play.
What if Josh Smith has hit his patented jump shots?
I mean, if he hits them, all hell breaks loose, clearly. As in the game, another game that we didn't talk about, remember when the Pistons, like, blew out the Cavs by, like, 30 in January? That actually happened. So, that could happen again.
This is a good point. This is a very good point. The Bucks game is just going to be, like, all kinds of awful.
Yeah.
So, and the Celtics game, I just want the Cavs, if they're going to end the season positively, that might be the game I want them to win the most, just so you could say you beat the worst Celtics team in the last, like, 5 years.
At least once.
At least one time. And then Brooklyn, that's a good way to capstone the season. I'm going to attempt to hopefully write a column about that. Because of the weird bookends. Because the first game, to me, I guess one other thing going back to our eulogy is that the first game, I went to the home opener with Zach, or one of the editors, and then two other people. And Andrew Bynum got this, like, huge pop. The arena was loud, and people were engaged in the game.
He only played, like, 10 minutes, but it was a dominant 10 minutes.
And then the season was, like, up here, started off really well, and then, as if you could see my arm right now, I'm doing a plane. And it just,
I mean, literally the next game was that ugly loss to the Bobcats.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember thinking the Cavs are going to beat the Bobcats. It's not really going to happen.
Yeah, like, the Bobcats aren't going to be good this year.
Nope.
And look,
their defense is going to be horrible. It's anchored by Al Jefferson. This is why you should never listen to predictions.
No.
At all.
You should just, like, watch it unfold. But, yeah, so that's that. But, again, Cavs got to win 4 games. A few games back of the Hawks. Don't have tiebreakers with the other team against the Knicks or the Hawks. So if they get a tie, they have to win this outright.
Yep.
And yay. That to me, that seems fairly unlikely.
Yeah, they're actually 5 back in the loss column.
So.
From Atlanta.
They're in some trouble.
Yeah.
So that's that for that topic. But we're gonna spend a lot of time on draft stuff this week. But one thing I just want to touch on is the ESPN True Hoop site, Cavs' blog, did a Q&A with noted reporter Brian Windhorst, who, yeah, if you don't know anything about him, he was the guy who covered LeBron in high school. He curled that into ended up working for the Plain Dealer as a Cavs beat guy. When LeBron left the Cavs, he ended up getting hired by ESPN. And then eventually, he has moved on to, you know, being kind of a weird Cavs source of news. He's still, like, weirdly respected. He did this really weird Q&A with Cavs the Blog. And he basically, like, said some very negative things about Kyrie.
Yeah.
And to me, it seems like the media narrative on Kyrie is that he's immature, which I'm sure there's something to that.
I mean, I don't think it'd be that much said if there wasn't something to it.
Yeah.
I mean, and he is 21. And it just is this weird, like, negativity around him.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard for me to get. I kind of wonder if it's because, if it's the Cleveland media that's kind of shaping this, which it obviously is. As actually, my sports room professor told us the story about how during the LeBron years, the Cavs, they would write nothing negative about LeBron. And I wonder if this is, like, just the making up for that. And I wonder if this is kind of where it's coming from, where it's, like, being too hard, being so much harder on a guy because you were really easy on this guy and he bolted anyway. I mean, because, I mean, as much as they won't admit this, a reporter who's covering a team wants their team to be good because it makes their job more interesting for them.
Yeah.
They're not going to go out and root, and they're not going to publicly cheer, and because that's not their job. You're supposed to be neutral, but you kind of want to see the people you have relations with succeed. There's kind of this, like, weird blurred line in that area of journalism. So, I don't know. But it's just, it was weird to me, this Q&A. I read it twice, and I was kind of just like, okay. You know?
Yeah.
But it's just, the media narrative on Kyrie just kind of confounds me a little bit. I don't know how it's gone from him being this, like, bright young star to a lot of bloggers, like, despise him.
Yeah.
At this point. Wizards Twitter, like, especially Ben M from Wiz of Oz, kind of, like, shits on him a lot, to be quite honest.
Which, like, to be fair, we've spent a lot of time shitting on John Wall, so we deserve that from Wizards Twitter. Sorry, sure. Wizards Twitter.
We apologize.
Enjoy your 5-game series against the Raptors. But, yeah, I think that this is just going to be something that we're going to have to deal with from now until the time that Kyrie leaves Cleveland through whatever capacity. Because he is kind of one of those guys who isn't what you want as a media personality. Like, you want a guy who you can be like, oh, he has, like, the heart to win and he has the will to win. Like, as much as that narrative is just complete and total crap, like, it's what a lot of media reports are based around, and, like, it's what the fans want to hear and want to read about. So it's going to continue to happen. And anytime you have a guy who at least comes off as passive, I don't think that Kyrie's actually passive. I also don't think that he actually doesn't care. When you have a guy like that, people are going to pile on him because it just doesn't fit our kind of preconceived notion of how an elite player in any sport is supposed to be. Like, we gravitate towards the guys like, you know, Brett Favre and Dwayne Wade, and guys who, like, put their bodies through hell, or guys who, like, it's very obvious, like, when they take over a game through their play style or through their demeanor, it's very obvious that they want to, or that is the thing that matters most to them in the world. And not everybody's programmed like that. And I know that Dirk got a lot of flack for that during his prime when he wasn't winning titles year in and year out. LeBron got it when he wasn't winning. Even though he was the only relevant player on multiple 50 and 60 win teams, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, only, even in, like, a basketball sense, in, like, the modern sense, you want, I think the superstar that is most cherished out of any superstar playing right now, without a doubt, is Kobe. Because he played through a lot of injuries and he has just, like, this nasty, like, kill everyone attitude. And exactly. It's just so easy to, like, embrace.
Yeah.
And you want guys to be just kind of cold on that court and have this, like, demeanor. So I'm like, and you're right. I think Dirk's, like, the perfect kind of guy to bring up because he's kind of perceived as being this, like, soft, like.
People thought that he didn't care about winning. And then he went on his 2011 title run. And that narrative completely shifted, even though, you know, Dirk was one of the most fiery competitors of the 2000s. Like, if you watch any playoff series, you can see it on his face. Like, he was a guy who always brought his A game in the playoffs.
Yeah, and even with Kyrie, like, he may not be this, like, you know, vocal, kind of just damn right dastardly, you know, guy. Like, he doesn't show as much emotion as, like, a Deion, and it makes him harder to, like, I guess maybe embrace. But it's like, you don't have a guy, I mean, that scores 44 points. I mean, and even if you want to look at the guy who preceded him in Cleveland, like LeBron, I mean, not like LeBron, it is LeBron, so excuse me for saying Lord-like.
Yeah.
LeBron is one of the most goofy, lighthearted superstars I think sports has ever seen. I mean, the dudes out there,
as
like...
As far as, like, yeah, as far as, like, a face of the league type
I mean,
guy.
Just looking, I mean, what are the, could you see Kobe going and doing a Harlem Shake video with his teammates?
I mean, I've seen the Turkish Air commercials. Kobe's got that in him. However,
he's not as willing to put it out there like LeBron is. LeBron, yeah. It's part of LeBron's persona. And with Kyrie, it's that he's just a young guy. I mean, he's 21 years old. Like, do you really? I mean, I think the media difference isn't weird. I don't think it's fair to write his story as this immature and paint him in that way. Now he's 21 years old. I mean, to be frank. 21-year-olds do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
20 kids and technically he'd be a junior in college right now. And most juniors in college.
Exactly.
Most juniors in colleges are having their first round of trips to the bar.
Yeah.
And getting drunk with their friends. And it just happens that Kyrie is doing this while going to big cities and being friends with rappers because he's a famous athlete.
Yeah.
Sorry, like.
That, yeah, like, I'm 21. I couldn't imagine being in the situation Kyrie's in.
You mad? Like, going out, like. Yeah, it's bizarre. It's really, to me, it's a very, like, bizarre kind of situation. And I think the
bottom line is people just need to weigh off of him for his personality. I wish people would weigh off of athletes in general for their personalities and stop dissecting their personalities. Got really sick of it when it was with Dwight Howard. Really sick of it with Kyrie. I just feel like if there was any, I just feel like there's no evidence that you can conceive these guys as not caring. Like, when you look at their on-court play, there's really no evidence of it. It's just a manufactured idea, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there's probably some, I mean, again, like, talking to my sports world professor, he said, like, one thing he pointed out is that some sports writers hold grudges.
Yeah.
Or there's some envy there. So I guess there's just so many things. It just, you need to decide for yourself, I guess, if you're a reader and a fan, to decide what you think of Kyrie for yourself and learn as much as you can about it and not let certain columns and quotes shape your opinion. I guess that's the point of what I'm saying.
And always pay attention to who's writing everything and
decide if that's something that you want to believe based on who's writing it. Like, If I'm ever writing something, if Aaron Kraft ever becomes a legitimate NBA rotation player, never read anything I write about him.
Because you, yeah,
exactly. It's just fair to put that warning out there because I don't like Aaron Kraft. Yeah. And it's the same thing with Windhorst and Kyrie. It's the same thing with Sam Amico and Nerlens Noel.
It's the same thing with, I guess, for, like, if you want to look at, like a guy that's going to be comparable and I think going to be put under a lot of scrutiny in the coming NFL draft.
Clowney and everyone.
I was going to say Manziel because he's a young kid who's barely 21, is friends with Drake, and is going to go out and just enjoy himself because he's 21 years old. And if you look at, like, how much he's been picked apart already, and you have people on ESPN already just kind of, like, shilling him. That he's not the prototypical, like, golden boy. Like,
see, I honestly think Clowney is the better comparison for Kyrie because they're getting a lot of the same complaints. Like, Clowney's being grilled because he takes plays off. He doesn't care. Everybody thinks that he just went through the motions at South Carolina, even though he's the best defensive end prospect that we've seen the last decade. And it's not like offenses were completely scheming around getting the ball away from him ever. That wasn't happening at all. But yeah, I just think that, you know, if you see someone getting trashed for their effort or for how much they care, it is not something that you should waste your time with. Because that A, does nothing for anyone, and B, is not based in fact whatsoever, 99% of the time, with the other 1% being any column that's ever been written about J.R. Smith.
Especially Ward Janarski.
Yes.
So, I guess from here, then I'll say that we're going to look into some new potentially players who could potentially join Kyrie. It's getting a draft season.
Yeah.
There's a really awkward transition, but I say that just because this Kyrie stuff is not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah.
As long as he's in Cleveland, he's going to be having to defend. He's going to tweet something like that on Twitter about how he defended himself, which I give him credit for doing, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the draft, Trevor.
Yeah.
This is the thing I want to that Cavs fans need to pay attention more. I didn't get to watch as much tournament basketball as I would have liked to.
Me either.
It was just I got really busy doing some other stuff.
Yeah.
Schoolwork, kind of important when you're in college.
Yeah.
Just a tad bit important, but.
Let's just start off with. Well, I want to address this. Is this draft overrated, do you think?
I will argue that it is not as legend is wrong, but it's not as crazy as I think it was made out to be early on. Paul Flannery did a really good podcast with Jonathan Givenoy about this, and it's more ordinary than I think you might think.
Yeah.
But there are some guys that I think are truly potential franchise guys. But I think it's going to be very rare if you ever see a draft like 2003 again.
Yeah.
Where you have LeBron, Wade, Bosh, you know, and more guys kind of go in that top area, and Melo. But I think if you look at the top of this draft, and I look at the top of seven in the Draft Express Sports, so Wiggins, Embiid, Parker, Randall, Exum, Smart, Vonleh, I think, I don't know much about Exum, so I kind of try to, like, stop, I just can't speculate as much just to kind of throw my voice out there. But I think there's a very good chance most of those guys become. I think Wiggins, Embiid, Parker, and Randall all have the potential to be very, very either the first guy on a really good team or a title contender or a second guy, especially for Randall. And I think Vonleh, Smart, and Exum from what I've seen can be really good players in the league. And I think, you know, if they develop in the right way, you could have a lot of really, really all-star level guys in this coming out of the top of the draft. And there's also some guys that are interesting, could be useful role players. You have McDermott, who I think could have a productive career. You know, Willie Cauley-Stein, Tyler Ennis, Gary Harris, Nick Stauskas could be a really good shooter in the right situation. I still love Rodney Hood from what I've seen. I know he needs some work on defense, but I think he could develop very nicely.
Yeah.
Maybe a poor man's Kyle Korver.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be the crazy draft that it was, even when Embiid started to come on the scene.
Yeah.
I think it's fallen off since then.
Yeah, I think that the most comparable draft to this one is 2009. Because, like you said, you've got everything at the top, which in 2009 was Blake Griffin, James Harden, Tyreke Evans, Ricky Rubio, Stephen Curry, Brandon Jennings. Like, there's a lot of star power in that. I know I just said star power and said Tyreke Evans and Brandon Jennings. They're really good players. But the thing about 2009 was it was just so damn deep. Like, you're also grabbing Gerald Henderson at 12, Drew Holiday at 17, Ty Lawson at 18, Jeff Teague at 19, Taj Gibson's coming in this draft, Dante Cunningham, Jody Meeks, Patrick Beverley in the second round. Like, it was just one of the, it was just one of the deepest drafts that we've seen. And this is just a draft that I think is really gonna match up with that really nicely. I think that you've got, in addition to all of the star players, you've got guys like T.J. Warren, Kyle Anderson, K.J. McDaniels, P.J. Harrison, guys way down at the bottom of the first round, and even into the second round, you've got plenty of name guys as well. All of that is just going to be. It's going to make this a very, very well-rounded and deep draft.
So, yeah, I think that's a good comparison. You're going to have, you know, I think you're right about that. I guess one other thing to note is that there's just a lot of ifs about certain guys, I think, in this draft.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you don't know what Wiggins fully develops into as a scorer. In non-fluid transition situations, is Embiid's back going to be okay? Is Parker going to be able to play defense? Is, you know, what is Randall going to look like once he Dante Exum? What is a Dante Exum?
Yeah.
You know, so, but I guess the fun thing to do is to start doing mock drafts.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of narratives, I think, depending on who, there's a lot of different guys that could go on. I think there's three guys that probably have a shot at going number one.
Yep.
I'd even make an argument that Randle should be in the discussion. I wouldn't pick him number one, but I think he deserves to be in that discussion. Because he might be the, I think you can make an argument that he's the safest pick out of those guys.
Yeah.
I think you make that argument, but we're going to, we flipped the coin before. Trevor's going to have the first pick. We're going to go by odds of being the number one pick. So assuming, and it won't work out this way, obviously, but we're just going to do it for this for sanity reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do it. I guess we could do it the other way, but I think this is a little bit more of a...
It's safer.
Because we could get some really, I mean, wacky scenarios.
Yeah.
Which, like, the Hawks can... I mean, my kind of my dream is that the Hawks somehow get the number one pick.
Yeah.
Because I would love that. I think it'd be great. But, like, them getting Wiggins, whew.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. But, so, Trevor, you have the number one pick with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Well... between all three of these players, the Bucks could use all three of them. I think that Embiid is probably their least likely option, going number one, just because they are stuck in the Larry Sanders contract, and they probably want to see how he returns from having just an abysmal season. So that puts it at Wiggins or Parker. I think either team could really help them. But this team needs some kind of scoring option that isn't just a chucker. Like, they need someone who isn't a high-usage player, paired with, you know, O.J. Mayo and Chris Middleton, who's somehow, like, ridiculously high-usage.
It gives, like, the Cleveland Gamer shoots, like, 33s.
Yeah, and Ersan Ilyasova is pretty high-usage as well. So... I'm going to go with Andrew Wiggins here. I think that the pairing of him and Giannis together in your starting lineup is the 2 and 3. Makes a lot of sense. Put him in there instantly. Your perimeter defense is going to be untouchable. I think you're getting 2 years when both of them kind of have a couple years to transition to NBA-style defense. I don't know how you score on that from the perimeter. There's just so much wingspan there and so much just sense of what to do on the perimeter already, and give them a couple of years to mature. That could be really dangerous. And I just think that he's the best player in this draft too. I think that he's the guy that you would most want to build around as a piece, because he's that kind of guy that could really go, he could really fit in anywhere, and he could go in a ton of directions with his career. I think that he could easily become a number one scorer and easily become, like, a very dominant scorer. I could also see him just being a very, very well-rounded, all-around guy.
So, like, Andre Iguodala.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think that Wiggins would be the safest pick for the Bucks at number one, and I think he makes the most sense for them, so I'm going with that.
Okay. I like that pick. That's probably, I think, I would have went too. I have the Sixers, Philadelphia 76ers at number two. This is a tough pick for me, because I think there's upside to the temptation to pair Embiid with Noel. I'm not going to do that. So to me, it comes down to Julius Randle and Jabari Parker. There's a need at both spots for these guys. The problem is you also have Thad Young on that team, and depending on what they do with Thad Young, he's either going to be traded or you make him your stretch four next to New Orleans. I'm assuming they're going to trade him.
Yep.
Part of me wants to take Randle because I think him in New Orleans as a front court is very tempting. But I'm gonna go Jabari.
Yeah.
Here's why. They have Mark Carter Williams. You can probably get another wing later on the draft to complement him in the backcourt. Whether it's like Gary Harris or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You have Thad. You can probably find another power forward at another spot to just do dirty work. You can also use Jabari at the 3 and the 4. You can't do that with him. He gives you versatility where you can go small,
yeah.
You can go big. He's gonna struggle on defense right away, but he gives you probably a legitimate number one scoring option right away for a team that needs one. I think Wiggins. I'd probably take Wiggins over Jabari for the Sixers if it came down to it. If that was the situation present,
yeah.
But I think in this case with the Wiggins off the board, I think Jabari is the obvious pick. So therefore, I'm putting in my card and Jabari Parker number two, Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay, sounds good. So I have the Orlando Magic at number three. We've got the two perimeter guys off the board. Unfortunately for the Magic, they seem pretty set at center and power forward. They've got Andrew Nicholson, Tobias Harris, and Nikola Vucevic there. So I don't really see them needing a big necessarily. Also, I think that they might be a little scared of Embiid's back. That might just because they are they're barely 2 years removed from a superstar with back problems that kind of killed their team. So I'm going to go a little bit different here. I think that I've had these two paired together for most of the season when I've done mock drafts just kind of in my head. I think that it makes a ton of sense, and I think that it, again, I'm just making a wingspan just tear on the perimeter, only this one's in my backcourt instead of on the wing. I'm taking Dante Exum, number 3.
Ooh, that's not where I thought you were going with that.
I think that Exum and Oladipo is a match made in heaven. Exum is kind of a pure point guard type. He can play off the ball a little bit, but he's a dominant defender. He's got great length. Meanwhile, Oladipo, great spot-up three-point shooter, becoming a better ball handler. These two could share the ball a little bit. You can play either of them with a follow, I think, in the backcourt. You can build around that as your long-term 1-2. I don't think that the Magic necessarily need a star out of this group, because I think the way that they're headed, they have a lot of flexibility and a lot of assets, and I think they can pool those resources to try and get someone to come to Orlando, whether it be through free agency or trade. I think that if they get another supporting piece here, it would probably be their best bet. I think that Exum makes a lot of sense for Orlando, and I kind of want them to not have pick number 3. If they're picking in the 4-5 range, I think that's their best. I think that's their best situation, because that's just the area that I would feel most comfortable for them getting a guy that they would be able to use effectively.
You know, I like that. That's interesting to me as well. You know, I think that would throw a hijink in the draft. That'd be interesting to see how that kind of things went out. And I've told you this before, and this makes my pick very easy. I go Joel Embiid at 4. You know, at that point, you could argue that he has the highest upside of anyone in the draft.
Mm.
It's very hard to find a game-changing center with his skills, it is, even with his back. You can keep Derek Favors. You can help. This probably helps Derek Favors' development at this point.
Absolutely.
I think that's an easy pick. I don't think there's much explanation needed here. If Embiid's on the board at 4 and you're the Utah Jazz, you make that pick instantly.
Mm-hmm.
You think about Randall for maybe a minute or two. You maybe think about Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
But I think once it comes down to it, it's obviously, to me, it has to be Joel Embiid.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I kind of just chuckled at the idea of Tyrone Corbin sticking around for next year and trying to play Embiid and Cantor together. But... yeah, Embiid makes a lot of sense because Embiid's got a little bit of a shot to him. He's got a little bit of range, and Derek Favors has none whatsoever. So it would really help, and neither does Cantor. So it really helped their spacing, I think, more than anything. So I like that idea. And they walk out obviously if they can get him at 4. 5th, I have the Boston Celtics. Kind of interested to see what they do with Avery Bradley. I think that really is what this hinges on.
Well, obviously this will come before that, though.
I have a feeling that they're gonna make their intention clear with this pick, but it's kind of difficult to do that. Especially if the draft goes the way that it has in this mock. It's gonna be very interesting because right now I think their two options are Randall and Smart. I don't think they're gonna take anybody but one of those two. They have Jeff Green locked up. They don't know what they're going to do with Avery Bradley. I like Marcus Smart for them at 5. I think that that makes the most sense.
I like that pick for them. This leaves me with probably my least favorite fan base in all of the world.
Yeah, I just realized that you were going to have to make this pick, and I kind of laughed a lot.
As Trevor knows, I despise Lakers fans. So, this is a tough pick for Lakers. This is a weird spot for them because I think they were originally hoping if they bottomed out as much as they have, they would be bad enough to get a franchise-changing guy to play with Kobe for a year.
Yeah.
Have Kobe rub off on that guy. They're not going to get that in this draft. You know, with Marcus Smart gone, though, I think the obvious pick here is Julius Randle. You know, you made it easy for me again just because you add that guy, you're going to lose Powell, but you get a young big that you can make as your 1 or 2 scoring option, can rebound right away, should be able to play right away.
isn't as a sexy of a pick, you know, as an Embiid would be, but smart pick, good value at that spot, and you there are, even if he just becomes Zach Randolph, that's a really good guy to have on your team for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and the Lakers, I think, are in a good situation at six because no matter how the first five picks play out, they can use anyone at this point. Like, yeah. They have so many holes and so many roster spots to fill that they can go in any direction with this.
They're the one bad team that doesn't have, like, a really, really good player at one position or, like, a serviceable player at one position.
Exactly. Like, they have Kobe and Powell, and both of them can... Kobe, obviously, you can just draft his replacement, and Powell can play center. Like, he can play the four or the five, so you can put him wherever you need. So I like this move for them getting Randall going with him and Powell as the front court next year. I have the Kings at seven.
These next two picks are going to be hilarity, just guaranteed.
Yeah,
hilarity.
We got the Kings and Pistons. The Kings are drafting the the Kings are drafting the guy that is going to be the first outside of the top six. We actually got the top six in the top six, which we didn't draft Vonleh at this point. So I think that that's interesting, and I think that that's an interesting move for the Kings.
I like him next to Boogie. I think him and Boogie could be a very nice front court.
Absolutely, because Vonleh's got some really, really nice range. He's not the best defender. He's a little flat-footed, and he's a little short, but he's got really long arms. He is going to be able to be a better defensive presence than Cousins. I think you can play these two together, and as funny as it is to say the Kings are going to roll with a power forward, Kings are rolling with a power forward. I'm going with Noah Vonleh, 7.
I like that pick. I mean, let's say his ceiling is Chris Bosh. That's a nice fit next to... A Chris Bosh type player is a really, really nice fit next to Boogie in my mind. Helps with spacing. Boogie can clear it in the middle even more, so...
And he can bail Cousins out on the defensive end, which is their biggest concern.
Yeah. Like, I love that pick. Then, obviously, we have the Detroit Pistons. Maybe the most awkward team to pick for in this draft.
Yep.
I think their biggest need, considering how their front court's built, was probably either shooting at the three or with a point guard. Neither of these positions is exactly fillable at this spot in the draft, logically.
You gotta reach.
Which is why I'm gonna reach. Which is why I think I kind of have to, because I think when it comes down to this, you can't draft a McDermott or an Aaron Gordon or a Saric here because they fill the exact same prototypical role that you're already paying Josh Smith way too much money to do.
Yeah.
Unless you can move Josh Smith, which is unlikely, it's hard to do that. Therefore, I'm going to go down to a guy who's at the peripheral of the lottery, and that's probably the second best point guard in this draft, and I'm going to have to just say Tyler Ennis. You're groaning at this, but I don't, like, literally at this spot.
No, I'm groaning at this because you took him away from the team that I think could use him the most. Denver is just screaming at you right now that Tyler Ennis is off the board.
Yeah. Brandon Jennings is Brandon Jennings. So
yeah,
you need an upgrade there. This is a guy who's going to be pass first, is bigger, can shoot a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he's okay.
Yeah.
He's going to struggle defensively, but you have Drummond in the middle. And this doesn't add to the clusterfuck that is the Detroit Pistons and just the roster that has no symmetrical balance to it. I thought about Rodney Hood for them too, but you need to do like a really, really good shooter or a point guard, and you're probably gonna I'd take Ennis at that point.
My one concern with that pairing then is that at all times the Pistons will have a point guard on the floor who can't finish at the rim. Tyler Ennis shoots 40% at the rim.
Yeah, unless they get somehow won the lottery and were able to take like Jabari or something. There's not a really good pick for this Pistons team.
No, there isn't. Ideally for them, I think, is them getting pushed back into a justifiable position for them to take one of the shooting threes, like whether it be T.J. Warren or whether it be Kyle Anderson. If they can get like some kind of small forward that's an upgrade over Kyle Singler, that's their best option. But yeah, that's not in that spot.
Yeah.
So Detroit is kind of screwed, but that's a good pick for them. I like Ennis. So now we get the Cavs.
We'll both pick for this team. Can I guess who you're gonna take?
You can guess. You're absolutely gonna be wrong, and I think it's gonna be the same. We're gonna draft the same person.
You're either going to draft Colley-Stein or Nurkic.
Yep.
So probably Nurkic.
No, I'm drafting Colley-Stein.
Okay.
He's the best rim protector in the draft, even better than Embiid. He's a non-factor offensively, right now at least. I mean, I think that you can develop him a little bit as a finisher at the rim. It developed his post moves a little bit. He's got some rawness to his post moves, but you're drafting this for defense. And as much as I've harped on, Cavs don't necessarily need a rim protector. Don't need a rim protector. You can get by without one. If it's there, you got to take it. So.
Yeah, you know, and I'll agree with you. I'll take Colley-Stein as well. I think, you know, you get the defensive presence in the middle with a big body. He's the anti-Spencer Hawes. And, you worry about how that affects the offense that already has some stagnation issues. And you worry how you can get Kyrie beats good in the pick and roll with Colley-Stein. But you can figure that out.
Yeah.
Depending on what happens with the version, maybe he comes off the bench as a rookie behind Hawes or something like that, and he learns from Hawes. But I think it's a logical picker. I think the only way you can go is if there's a three you really love at this spot.
Yeah.
That's the only other way you can go.
Yeah, they're in the same boat as Detroit, where they would be really, really well serviced if they were picking like 13 and 14.
You could take
Hood. You could take Harris. You could take Anderson.
Because you're losing Luol Deng. I mean,
yeah.
You have to remember that. Like, Luol, this is likely a guy to either replace to be your anchor in the middle,
mm-hmm.
or replace the Luol Deng long term and be part of the Kyrie Deion power circle.
What's just one more thing before we continue going here? Say the Cavs get the first pick or they get the number three pick. Who do you want at each of those spots?
I want Wiggins at one.
Okay.
And then at three, I'd be cool with either Embiid or Jabari. I know it's like...
Just whatever.
Whoever, whoever's there.
Okay.
You take the one that's on the
board.
I would probably take Wiggins at one, though, just because defensively it would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
More kind of does some things that you don't necessarily get from other guys. Defensively is a big thing, though, to be honest with you. And then, you know, whichever one isn't taken at number two between Embiid and Parker, I think you're good with either one because I think they both help you.
Yeah, I think that's how I would go too. I would go Wiggins at one, Embiid at three. Wiggins just because I think that he can play the role they wanted Luol Deng to play this year, only better.
And younger, and
quicker. And then I think Embiid. If you draft Embiid, Hawes is walking, and you're just rolling with him next to Tristan Thompson.
I like that front court.
Yeah, I like the idea of playing him like, playing him like 33 minutes a game right off the bat. Just play him a ton, let him learn on the fly. My one big red flag there is that you know Embiid and Varejão. Is a little bit of a risk there. You probably have to go get another big who can play center.
I mean, you do have Sellers, though.
Oh, yeah, you do have Zeller.
Don't forget about Tyler.
Don't forget Tyler. How could I forget?
We're going to make t-shirts.
But, yeah, I think that would be the best. So we've got Wiggins probably if they somehow get a top three pick. Wiggins or Embiid. And then at nine, we're drafting... We're drafting Willie Cauley-Stein. So back to you. You get the Sixers again at number 10.
We'll make these next few picks brief. It's not Cavs, but
you pick Parker, correct? For them,
yes.
The first one. Okay.
So there that takes away Dougie McDermott, which I think would be an interesting fit if they had Wiggins. But I think this is another team I think might need to reach just a little bit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of centers here. They have Nerlens. You can maybe look at Clint Capella, who's an international player. But I'm going to go with, I have three or four players in mind here. There. You have Anderson, Warren, Stauskas, Gary Harris, Hood, so five guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the guy that I think complements Michael Carter-Williams' ball dominant style the best. And I don't know why he's 24, but I think Hood would be a really, really interesting fit on this team, to be honest with you. Think about
You realize you just picked both of them.
Hood
you just
Parker.
Took both the Dark Duke guys. That's interesting.
Yeah, okay, but I think they fit together, though, because
yeah.
Hood needs the ball. Hood does not need the ball out in his hands. So then for the Sixers next year, you could potentially roll out a lineup of MCW, Hood at the 2, Parker at the 3, Thad at the 4, Nerlens at the 5.
And you absolutely don't have the you don't have usage problems there at all.
You're long. You have you have really really nice spacing.
Yeah.
You have a one option in Parker. Worth that you have a one and Thad.
So much athleticism. So much.
Yeah, you have length in the wing. You can you can use Nerlens if he's healthy to kind of help Jabari and Hood, you know, mask their defensive problems.
Mm-hmm.
I like that team. I'm probably become a Sixers blogger at that point because I just would want to watch that team just run.
Yeah.
All the time. I think you can make an argument for Gary Harris. I think you can make an argument for Stauskas, but I like Rodney Hood's skill set. I think him and Parker play well together, and I think that team just is a lot of fun with that pick. And maybe it's a reach because I really don't know why he's 24 on this board.
Yeah.
When you don't see him in that spot on other boards, but I go Rodney Hood at 10.
Okay, at 11 I have the Atlanta Hawks, and we've completely.
We've destroyed the Draft Express, like, top 14.
Well, there's one player in particular who has slid, and if he's there for the Hawks take him. Because they kind of have the luxury of the fact that, you know, their entire team got injured this year, and that's why they were bad. So they have a lot of pieces there. They can afford to, and they have two picks in this draft, I believe. No, they just have the one, because the Celtics have the second pick. Okay, so they are in a nice little spot here. I would ideally like to see them grab they're another team. Ideally, I would like to see them grab a small forward. However, Aaron Gordon's there. Him developing behind Millsap sounds real fun. I'll take Aaron Gordon.
I like that pick. And then at 12, I have the Denver Nuggets. Since Willie Cauley-Stein's on the board, and I think they definitely need a big who can defend a little bit, I'm going to go with Nurkic.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't seem like the prototypical European guy who can, you know, not defend. He's a bad defense, and he seems to have these big size, 6'11", 280. He's only 19. You know, you can maybe he stays for a year overseas, and maybe he comes over right away, but that's the kind of guy you need. If you're gonna be paying J.J. Hickson money to play basketball, you need a guy who can do everything that J.J. Hickson doesn't. Even if this guy's young, I think that this might be your best chance to get a guy like that.
Yeah.
While still, like, being bad for another year and trying to figure yourself out.
Yeah. Him in the pick and roll with Lawson sounds fun.
Yeah.
So, I can get behind Nurkic. That's a good pick. If they can't get Tyler Ennis, because I think they need a backup point guard really bad.
You know, they have, like, a lot of random guards on the team.
Yeah, but I mean, they just, that's the one thing they need, I think, more than anything. But if they can get a rim, if they can get a guy who can protect the rim a little bit, that's a good idea. 13, I have the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I've lucked into a perfect guy for them. We've heard all year that the Timberwolves' major problem is shooting. Hi, Doug McDermott.
Yep.
That's perfect for them.
Can you play the three, though? Next,
absolutely.
Okay.
I think
you can play the three, then I'm more into that. I'm more into that Kevin Love and him. I was worried about them being too similar of style.
Yeah, they're a little too similar, but I think that you'll figure out a way to make that work. He just has the skill set that is going to be really nice. I like the idea of him playing next to Corey Brewer. I like the idea of just a power rebounding unit where you're playing McDermott, Love, and Peck, all three of them together. I just think that's a match made in heaven for them. Doug McDermott, number 13. Yeah. So you have the final pick.
I have the final pick, and this is going to be the Phoenix Suns. I think, you know, with the bigs kind of off the board at this point, and there's a one strength of position in this lottery, and that's the wings at this point. I think one area Phoenix could probably use a little bit of help, if I'm not mistaken, just by watching them a few times, is that they probably could use another two or three to kind of fill in their rotation.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
No, I don't think so. I think that would be helpful for them.
I mean, especially because you're not going to draft a point guard. You have Bledsoe and Dragic. You can't. It'd be too much of a reach to take like a big. You know, like.
Well, you take Capella.
That's true. You could go that route. But it would be a reach to take like a guy who would be like a nice, you know, energy guy like Montrezl Hazel.
Yeah.
Harrell, whatever, who would be, you know, like an interesting fit, but there's a little bit of reach for that. I want a guy on this team who can help with spacing a little bit and just kind of do what be Gerald Green when Gerald Green's not there and have like a better higher ceiling. I'm gonna go Nick Stauskas. You know, it's a guy who necessarily doesn't need the ball a ton in his hands. I love guys like that who just don't need the ball in their hands to find shots, especially when you have two guys. If your team's gonna be so predicated on Dragic and Bledsoe driving the ball up the court and playing in tempo and
controlling the pace of the game, you need guys who can just float. And I think Stauskas at that point is a decent value. Probably is a bigger need, yeah. I would say. I mean, you only have Plums. You have one of the Plums, and you have Channing Frye, and like you have a Mika, like maybe if you sign cheap next year, like whatnot. I don't know. They're just like, you need a big there, and I think you make room for Capella.
Mm-hmm.
But with no Collie Stein, no Nurkic, just take the shooter. And then you could just throw some money around in the free agency. Maybe go after like a Sam Dallenberg or someone cheap in that regard. Or maybe, you know, it'd be wild, but you know, maybe like a guy like Hawes.
I have a weird feeling that Phoenix won't be picking here. I have a weird feeling that they're gonna move this.
Yeah, in search of something.
Yeah.
Who would, if you were them though, and you get the first pick, who are you taking at one? I think you'd go two really distinct ways with this. I think it's go Embiid or Wiggins, or Parker. I think
I'd probably go one of the wings more than Embiid. I don't want Embiid with their wide open style. He can't run the four as well.
Medical staff though. That's not like a reason to pick a guy because you can help him be healthy, but like that's just like. That'd be a good... Because my nightmare is that somehow Portland, like...
Yeah.
Ends up in the lottery, and then, like, Embiid becomes, like, Greg Oden 2.0.
But last year's guy who should have gotten number one is there. And when you have Alex Len, there's no reason to take another center. So I'm just gonna say Wiggins is probably their best fit. And also, I just want to mention that number 16 sitting there right now is the Chicago Bulls. And...
They're killing me for taking Stauskas, aren't they?
Probably. That's a good fit for them. But also a great fit for them. Because he's sitting there. Is Clint Capella. I was just looking at the next few picks, seeing like who would probably make the most sense. For a random team, if they walk out at actually, I just realized they're picking 19 too, which is them drafting Harrell.
That's a good fit too. Phil's
booted. They walk out of here with what the Draft Express mock draft has them with. If they walk out of this draft with Stauskas and Harrell, it's game over, man.
And Derrick Rose comes back healthy, and this team wins the title next year.
I like it. Anyway, that was our mock draft. I feel like we'll do this a couple more times before the draft. We're about to get real draft heavy.
I'm gonna start binging on Draft Express videos. I need to watch the Hood one too. I can figure why he's at 24.
Yeah,
he's at 24 and actually like played for the. I don't like him in Charlotte too much.
Yeah,
I really like Rodney Hood though. I like his skill set quite a bit. Trevor knows this.
Yeah, I think that I'm gonna start the draft profiles this week, and I'm gonna start with Dario Saric, just because he's who the Draft Express has the Cavs taking right now. So those will start rolling out a couple each week. Should be fun.
Yeah, you know it's that time of year. We have still a lot of time to the draft, but you know NCAA basketball's done, and then it's a big lapse, and then June comes, but. This has been Tuesday at the Rise of Nuclid. You can find Trevor on Twitter at TMagnati. You can find me on Twitter at CDomainRights. Stay tuned for all of our content. Stay tuned for the draft stuff. Hopefully we can talk to Sam Vecini from Fear the Sword to talk more of the draft because he knows much more than both of us.
Yep.
And, you know, if you have thoughts, feel free to share them in the comments below. Make sure to like us on Facebook. Follow our Twitter account at RD Cavaliers and whatnot. And, you know, stay involved and try to watch the title game on Monday. You get several prospects who are interesting. In that game.
Yep.
And one guy who could become the next, troll heavy Shabazz Napier. There's also some interesting guys at Kentucky. You not only have the chance to watch Randall, is Collie Stein still out?
Yep.
Well, he's out, so that's kind of a bummer, but...
His backup looks real good, though. I think,
that Johnson kid.
Yeah. Then you have the weird Harrison twins, and there's some... Watch the title game if you can, and we will talk to you guys next